โมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะอะปารุตาเตสะนะมัตตสะดวาระเยสุตะวันโตปะมุจจันตุสันตังติI don't know if anybody's noticed recently, but the world is just as it is. It's not how it should be, which is a kind of disturbing little fact, but one which I think it's useful to remind ourselves of from time to time.All this is just how it is, and it's not any other way. This moment, this place, these people, everything here, every feeling inside your body, every thought inside your head, it's just how it is, it's not any other way.So humans have this curious notion of ought. Things ought to be this way. They ought to be that way. And this ought is generally understood to be the province of ethics.Should not. When I was at university, I studied ethics, and for many years I believed that ethical behavior or good behavior was the highest thing that we could aspire to. I thought that was the pinnacle of humanity, was ethics.And so I got a bit of a shock when I came to Buddhism and I found that the Buddha taught that ethics was just the first stage of practice. It's the basic stuff. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. And while at a level of Sila, then of course the ought applies.But at the level of panya, at the level of wisdom, there's no oughts anymore. There's only is's. I used to think that good behavior, good conduct meant trying to change the world and make the world a better place. I believed that we should.Make the world a better place. I don't really believe that anymore. I don't believe it because I think the world is quite capable of stuffing itself up without any help from us. And I don't believe it because I think it's kind of narcissistic to think that we have some special role to make everybody else better. I think thatWhen we do the ought, when we do what we should do, when we try to make the world a better place, we do it for mostly for the sake of our own integrity. There's an image that I always remember somebody mentioned, it was only an apocryphal story, so I can't vouch for its authenticity, but somebody once asked Ajahn Chah, they described the palliative care work they were doing, looking after the dying. And they asked Ajahn Chah, you know, by counseling the dying, by being them for them, by helping them, you know, does this give a benefit for people who are passing away? And Ajahn Chah said, of course it does. He said, it's like if somebody was standing up to their knees in a river of molten lava and you were to offer themA sweet, a lolly, and say, here, this will take your mind off the pain. That's what palliative care work is. And that's the ought. That's how much good ought can do us. We give that person a lolly because it's a good thing to do. We sit beside somebody who's dying in pain because it's a good thing to do. You know, that simile that Ajahn Chah is giving is by no means disproportionate if you compare it with, say, some of the similes the Buddha used in the suttas. Talked about, for example, the suffering of samsara being like the mighty Himalayas, and the suffering that remains to a stream enterer being just like seven small little pebbles. So I think this helps to put things into perspective, like what we should do, what our ethical obligations are, where they come from. Put them in context. Are we going to rid the world of corruption, cruelty, violence? No, it's not going to happen. Can we, here and now, choose ourselves to act without cruelty, without violence? Yes, we can do that. So let's do what we can. So when we look at things from a wisdom perspective in Buddhism, we tend to see the ethics or the conventions and the behaviours, the oughts, what we should be doing, what's the proper thing. We tend to see them more in context, more in perspective, rather than being absolutes. And when we look at these things in context, we can see that there's a reason why they are oughts, why they shoulds, or should nots. And we can see that there isn't a gulf between the is and the ought. This is something in Western philosophy that tends to be that the division is made very strong, and they try to throw out the ought and just keep the is, especially in some kinds of modern science, and of course ends up with doing things like inventing the atomic bomb. Now, from a Buddhist point of view, there isn't this vast gulf. But if you look more closely, and you say, what ought I do in this case? What should I do? What is the right thing? When we begin our practice, we just do what's the right thing because someone's told us that's the right thing, because that's what the convention is, because that's what the rule says. When our practice deepens, we start to understand cause and effect. We start to understand the patterns. When this happens, that happens. And it's quite a remarkable thing that if you look at how the Buddha talks about ethics, that very often he expresses this in a indicative tense rather than an imperative one. A simple example of that would be, say, the five precepts. If you compare the five precepts with, say, the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments are all thou shalt and thou shalt not, somebody telling somebody else what to do, whereas the five precepts is all samadhiyami, I undertake. So it's something that a person themselves decides to do, they're not told. And there's no should and should not, it's just a statement, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not trying to say the Buddha never used shoulds, of course he did a lot of the time. But if you look closely at the way he formulated ethical issues, he also quite commonly just formulated in an is form. So for example, some of the anumodana verses that we recite every morning. You know, if somebody who makes offerings and is kind and generous, then they will receive four kinds of benefits: long life, beauty, happiness, and health. So there's no should there. The Buddha's not saying you should be generous. He's just saying if you are somebody who is generous, this is the response. This is what happens. He's pointing to the patterns that you can observe for yourself. He's pointing to what is. So when we think of ethics or good behavior in this way, it's not a set of rules which is imposed on nature, which is trying to make us do something that we don't want to do. I mean, that's how ethics normally is, isn't it? It's like laws or something like that, when actually you really want to drink and party and have fun and all those things, but there's a rule that tells you you can't do those things that you want to do. So it's like a prison. And so this is why sometimes we have this kind of mistaken idea that keeping rules or whatever is like it's an obstruction to freedom. We should be spontaneous and creative and so on. And that's freedom. But the rules really aren't like that. If we think of the rules more like training wheels, remember the Buddha always taught them as training. So even like training wheels on a bicycle. Oh yeah, the training wheels on a bicycle restrict what the bicycle can do, don't they? In other words, it stops the bicycle from falling over so you hurt yourself. So there's a should implicit there. The bicycle should be upright. And the training wheels are there in order to make sure it stays upright. But if you play around on a bicycle with training wheels for a while, before too long, you don't need training wheels. You stay upright all by yourself. And then you realize that should, that ought, was not trying to do something against nature. I mean, in one sense it is. I mean, the nature is you get on a bike and you fall over, right? That's nature, following the way of gravity. But it's also nature to be able to stay on the bicycle, to be able to balance on it. I mean, it's a curious thing, isn't it? But we can do it, and once you've done it for a while, it's not too hard. In fact, once you know how to do it, it's the easiest thing in the world to stay upright on a bicycle. You don't even have to think about it. So, what before seemed to be against nature, against the nature of falling off the bicycle, now becomes perfectly natural. That's what you do, you stay upright, and then you realize, well, actually that way of relating to nature is much more useful, much more fun, because you can ride wherever you want. So the purpose of the training rules is not to go against nature, but to help us to have a more advanced, more developed, more skillful way of using gravity and using nature on a bicycle. And so the same way with ethical precepts, it's not in order to make us stop doing things that we want to do. They're there in order to show us that sometimes the things that we want to do are going to lead to suffering. And they're there to show us that there are other things that we can do that don't lead to suffering. And one of the curious things about that is that if you try to force people to keep ethics, I mean, to a certain degree, obviously you have to. I mean, you have to have laws that tell people don't kill and these kinds of things. But if you're talking about more subtle areas of ethics, keeping precepts and so on, if you try to make people do it, then something always turns out wrong because it's not really following the way of nature. I mean, sometimes, yeah, you have to do it, but you try to avoid it. But when you do it and it works, then you learn something about yourself that's very interesting. You learn that I don't like falling on the ground and scratching my knee. I like being able to ride wherever I want, confidently. And same thing with the ethical precepts. Even though we feel a pull or a drive to do the wrong thing, then there's something in us that knows that actually at a deeper level, what we want to do is what is right. And of course that feeling is that feeling of what we call guilt, remorse. And remorse which knows that we've done something that we don't really think is the right thing to do. So what we discover in that moment is a little bit about ourselves. We discover that lower nature, that those things which were leading us to suffering, we discover that there's something peripheral about that, something shallow, something distorted, something that isn't really who we are. And if we listen very closely, we can feel that there's actually something in that act of choosing to do what's right. There is something in that that helps us become more fully who we really are. And that, another way of putting that, I mean, that's a very highfalutin sounding way of putting it, but you just feel good about yourself. You do something good, you do the right thing, you feel good about yourself. You feel happy. Because you're acting in a way that's in harmony with what's there. It's like if you're making a sculpture, and you make a shape, a form that suits the material that you're working with. There's a quality of rightness to it. Or if you're writing a song, or anything that you're doing, cooking some food, when you cook the cabbage, you can take the most humble ingredient, like cabbage or rice or something like that, and if you cook it in the way that it needs to be cooked, not cooking it too much, not cooking it too little, not too much seasoning, not too little, all of those things. If you do it just the right amount, then it'll end up being really delicious, even though it's something very simple. So this is what we're doing when we're practicing ethics. We're not making ourselves do something that's against our nature. We're learning that what we had mistakenly taken to be our nature actually was just a lower, lesser aspect of who we are. And that there's something higher, something truer. And that this isn't just a theory or an idea, but it's something you experience. You experience that sense of peace, that sense of contentment, that sense of joy from doing what is right. And that joy is precisely what happens when what you're doing is in accordance with reality. And it's that joy and that happiness which is precisely the joy of what they call integration, where all the different parts of who you are starting to come into harmony. So the path of doing what is right, doing what we ought to do, is also the path of truth. So for this reason, when we're considering ethical questions, considering morality or what the right choice is and so on, we have to make these choices on a daily basis. We should always, while we're considering those choices, be listening to that voice which is calling us towards a higher truth, towards a life that is lived in tune with the Dhamma. So that's all I had to say for this evening. I'd like to offer that for your reflection.
Upapipanno
Bhagavata.